Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Heart of Stone by Philippa Norcross and Michael Anderley. Narrated by Patricia Santomasso. Chapter 1. The primary thing Cora had learned during her prolonged stay with Madame Ivanova Antonova, the matriarch of the gens Antony, the Antonov family of vampires, was that if you lived long enough, the chances were good you'd end up with more money than you knew what to do with. This expressed itself in one of several ways. If you were like Countess Emiliana, a good friend of Madame's, you would acquire a huge wardrobe of designer clothing from multiple centuries. Your walk-in closets would be museums, and you would hire a veritable cadre of clothing preservationists and historians to care for your vast wardrobe. If you more closely resembled His Royal Highness Navi Jay in your preferences, you would purchase a fleet of vehicles. Not only cars, but also the best of the best of motorcycles, airplanes, boats, and bicycles. Wheeled and winged contraptions would be your passion, and you would single-handedly employ enough mechanics and maintenance workers to staff a small country. Then again, if your tastes leaned more toward the style of Baron Lyachenka, you would amass libraries rivaling those of Congress, the British Library, or the late Library of Alexandria. There would be no book too rare, no price too high. Nothing would stand between you and your newest and dearest acquisition. You would be on a first-name basis, even on speed dial, with the most prestigious book dealers in the world, and the top fire prevention specialists and archivists. If you were Ivanova Antonova, you bought real estate. Cora had accompanied Madame on not one, not two, but more than a dozen hops around the globe, visiting Antonova's houses. They weren't all mansions, but they were all in perfect condition, and Antonova staffed each according to its needs. They'd visited mansions, but they'd also visited castles, cottages, and chalets. Antonova's tastes ranged far and wide, and Cora couldn't detect a pattern other than as many dwellings as possible. With them were Jack and Ella. The girl became a vampire far earlier than most vampires would consider responsible. Jack had turned her when Madame tried to save her from an abusive home. In recent months, Jack and Ivanova had been working on magical ways to cause Ella to age, attempting to rectify the unfortunate side effects of saving the little girl's life. While she'd been turned as a preteen and was chronologically in her late teens, she now had the appearance and physiology of a 15-year-old and the attitude to match. Speaking of preteens, Andrew and Andrea Tasman also traveled with the Antonova troupe. Cora had rescued the siblings from the evolved Doomsday cult by chance only weeks before. Andrew was 11 and Andrea was 9. They celebrated their birthdays while on the road with a vampire party. Andrew had a magically perfect memory, and Andrea was a warding prodigy. They were grumpy today because they were tired of traveling. Cora would have said the same if pressed, but not within Antonova's hearing. One did not turn one's nose up at the hospitality of a vampire matriarch, and therefore one also did not question said vampire matriarch's odd traveling habits. This was the 9th house in almost as many days. Despite being a well-fed vampire who shouldn't have any trouble with her energy levels, Cora felt like a dead woman walking. That's what she technically was, but she wasn't supposed to feel like it. Therefore, when they put their bags down in the entryway of the 3-story Edwardian Terrace house in a magically hidden suburb of London, it was all Cora could do not to sit on her bag, cross her arms, and state unequivocally that she wasn't going anywhere for at least a week. However, she'd done some growing up over the last weeks, notably in the area of, shit, I'm suddenly responsible for 2 preteens. She reflected that the thought only briefly crossed her mind instead of taking up residence, which she was prone to allowing. She drew in a long, slow breath and let it out. Then she looked at Andrew and Andrea, as cheerful as a bright summer's day, which this was not, being a prime example of distinctly dreary mid-spring, she asked. Shall we go and get settled? Andrew groaned.
No, we're gonna leave again tomorrow. What's the point?
Andrea stuck her tongue out at him.
Quit being rude.
Antonova interrupted with a quiet clearing of her throat. Andrea snapped her head around to look at the pale, white-haired woman, and Andrew rolled his eyes. Jack was carefully not looking at Antonova, much like Cora. Ella looked at the matriarch like she was about to pop the bubble she was blowing in the woman's face.
We'll be staying here for some time.
Antonova held up a hand to pause the indignant flow of words that bubbled up in each.
I must beg your indulgence and your pardon. Our globetrotting has not been without purpose. I apologize for dragging you all on what must have seemed like an endless, pointless journey.
Cora glanced at Jack automatically, and her heart twinged when he didn't return it. After what had seemed like an awkward, mutual realization of romantic feelings, they continued blushing and stammering around each other for a few days. There had been one almost kiss that Cora had honest to God felt like writing home to Julia about. Except she'd accidentally ghosted Julia in the mad rush of taking out the Evolved in Italy, and her sister was pointedly not taking her calls. Cora was getting worried. It was her habit to give people the silent treatment. Julia was usually the other way around and never stopped calling. Unfortunately, being dragged around the world on an endless, pointless journey had occupied Cora's attention. When you're on such a journey, did she mention it was endless and pointless? It was too easy to focus on how bloody awkward things had gotten between you and your potential love interest.
I have been searching for the correct location for our stay,
Antonova continued, snapping Cora's attention back to the present. Correct location? Cora echoed, eyebrows curving in ardent skepticism. What does that mean? Looking for a place with the right light in the evenings? Somewhere with the right feel? Jack looked at her this time, and Cora realized with a rising flush of embarrassment that had been her outside voice, and she'd talked back to a vampire matriarch who could turn her into liver pate or Swiss cheese in a heartbeat if she felt like it. Sorry, she murmured. Her face was deeper red than the brickwork of the house's facade. She could feel it. Antonova snorted.
About time one of you got the balls to snipe at me. No, I have not been hauling you around the world to get you to talk back. I see that thought, Miss Rhodey.
Cora closed her mouth. She hadn't been about to say that. No, sir.
You are not all that far off, however,
Antonova continued.
I have been searching among my dwellings for somewhere with magic that resonates with the children's, Ella's in particular, but also the Tasman's. There is work to do, and there is much to be said for being in a comfortable place, somewhere that feels like home. This is it?
Jack looked up at the tall entranceway, his eyebrows sketching as much doubt as Cora's.
Yes, go and settle in. Once the aches and pains of travel have subsided, I suspect you will feel it.
They split up, finding rooms that suited them. Cora trailed the kids and picked a room near theirs, but not so close that they felt she was watching them. Then she returned to the main floor, found the kitchen, and made herself tea. The silver lining of being a tag-along on Antonova's hunt for the right feng shui had been that she'd spent most of her mental energy being annoyed at the constant travel. Now that she knew she was staying in one place again, her thoughts returned to the refrain that had underscored her life for months. What now? She was at loose ends, to put it bluntly. She had no life to go back to in Ontario. She'd quit her job at Starbucks. She hadn't practiced an aria since before being diagnosed with brain cancer, and her sister wasn't talking to her. She'd become a vampire to escape terminal cancer. Immediately after doing so, she stumbled into a plot to destroy the world while accidentally saving two kids. She'd somehow become pseudo-mom to said two kids and had also taken out many of the would-be world destroyers. Now the two kids were safe. Nominally, anyway. Ivanova Antonova's main line of work was espionage. Most of the vampires she turned worked for her in one capacity or another, and quite a few became assassins. Cora had no interest in becoming an assassin. She considered the career entirely unethical and regretted every life she'd taken since becoming a vampire. Luckily, Madame Antonova had agreed to provide for Cora, at least for now. The Tasman kids had adopted her as their new mom, and Andrea Tasman was helping Antonova with her Ella project, so it made sense. It wasn't like Antonova was hurting for money. Helping Cora wasn't putting her out. Cora didn't want to be a freeloader. She wanted to do something worthwhile with her life, something meaningful. If she was going to live forever, she didn't want to waste it. What could she do? She had centuries of viable life before she started slowing down. She could become anything, learn anything, do anything. Then again, all that would be moot if the world got blown up.
I think I have to take out the Evolved,
she remarked to the kitchen cabinet before her. At some point in her tea-making process, she'd stalled out. Looking down, it was evident that she'd lost the plot somewhere between picking tea and pouring hot water.
A noble goal, but it's going to come with a body count, a voice replied behind her.
She started and spun.
Jack, you scared me!
Sorry. You spoke aloud, so I figured you knew I was there.
Lost in thought, she admitted.
I see that now.
He chuckled, then sobered.
My point stands, though. If you want to take out the Evolved, you need to assassinate people.
Cora made a face. Jack knew her distaste for wet work.
Not if I can help it. I'm going to find a way.
If you say so.
Oh, she could kill him.
Chapter 2 Cora left the kitchen with a minor flounce, courtesy of her theater training, used to great effect, in her opinion, and took her grumpy self looking for the library. There had to be one, after all. There was no way Madame Antonova would have a house without a library. Cora planned to huff through the halls moodily until she found it. It was almost a nice change to feel like she had something to be huffy about. She'd been in a serious funk for a few weeks because she felt guilty and disgusting every time she looked in a mirror. It reminded her that she'd become a creature most people believed was abhorrent. She'd mostly gotten over that. Mostly. Now she was pissed that becoming a vampire seemed to lead irrefutably to becoming an assassin. Did vampirism cause you to stop thinking outside the box or valuing human life because yours was theoretically endless? She huffed one more time in the back of her throat as she tried yet another door. This time, she'd found the library. Time to put those ethical conundrums aside and start some real work. This library wasn't as well appointed as the one at Antonov Hall in Houston, but it was still impressive. Floor-to-ceiling bookshelves lined the walls, all made of wood in a deep mahogany color and polished to a shine. The spines lined up perfectly. They appeared to be alphabetized by author's last name, and the armchairs were poofy and upholstered in gray-green damask paisley. It was a reading room instead of a research room, but that was fine. Cora wasn't there for the books anyway. She'd stopped by her room to grab her messenger bag. Now she fetched her laptop from inside it as she sat in one of the armchairs. She fired it up, opened a new blank document, and started writing everything she knew about the Evolved. The Evolved. Doomsday cult. Believes magicals with certain magic types, possibly genetic or racially specific, are supposed to run the world. Intend to blow the place up and start over in the radioactive dust. Former bases, Wild Meadow Communal Farm in Ontario, include commune/barracks, farms, renewable energy sources, and bunkers of supplies. Believed mostly taken out by fire 3 months ago. Leader of this cell was Holly Ashton, who may or may not be dead after I attacked her and drank her blood. Cora shivered, although the room wasn't cold, and vampires couldn't technically feel cold.
She still had nightmares about going berserk and attacking Holly Ashton in the massive farmhouse at Wildmeadow. She'd done it to get Andrew, Andrea, and Charlotte out after the wards and guards brutally attacked them. But despite the apparent necessity, she'd still lost control. Charlotte. Now there was an idea. The British academic was an intelligence agent working for MI-18, the branch of British intelligence tasked with magical security. She'd infiltrated the London branch of the Evolved before Cora's involvement, thanks to her association with the Tasman's mother. Something about rare books, if Cora remembered correctly. Charlotte already knew more than Cora. She could help. Cora balanced her laptop on her knees, pulled out her phone, scrolled to Charlotte's contact card, and hit the button to video call her. They were in the same city. Theoretically, anyway. She didn't know where Charlotte had gone after they'd parted ways at the end of their last adventure in Italy. The other woman had said she had work to do. The call rang long enough that Cora was composing a message in her head for Charlotte's mailbox. She stuttered in surprise when Charlotte picked up.
"Hello, Cora,"
the mousy woman greeted. She looked vaguely red-faced, and her hair was coming loose from its ponytail. She was outside. "Hi, Charlotte. Sorry, did I catch you at a bad time? I can call back later."
No, it's fine."
Charlotte sounded breathless. "I was going for a run, and to be honest, I'm happy to cut it short." She let out a big exhalation and sat on a park bench. "Everything all right?" "Yeah, everything's fine. I'm gathering everything I know on the Evolved, and realized I know way less than you. I figured, since we're in the same city, I might as well call you."
"Oh, are you in London? Cheerio, then."
Charlotte grinned and laid on the accent a few layers thicker as she teased Cora.
"Will you be here long?"
"I have no idea," Cora admitted. "Antonova's had us hopping around the globe, trying to find a place to stay that vibes with Ella's magic."
"Ah, understandable."
Charlotte nodded as if this made perfect sense. Cora decided to let it slide. "Anyway, like I said, I'm trying to put everything together. I wondered if you'd be willing to help."
"Certainly."
The agent glanced to both sides, deciding whether she was in a safe enough location to chat.
"Let me put my headphones in. I'll have to be circumspect, but I think you can fill in the blanks."
"Probably. If I get confused, we can always talk again later. Thank you, by the way. I appreciate this." Cora set her phone down in the crook of her laptop, leaning it against the screen in a spot where it wouldn't obscure her document. "Apologies for the typing noise."
"I'll survive," Charlotte chuckled. "Where are you so far?"
The two women talked for nearly 40 minutes, at the end of which Cora's file was nearly a dozen pages long. She'd made an excellent decision in contacting Charlotte. The agent did indeed know far more than Cora. The group the Tasmans had been part of was one of several apocalypse preparedness cells. They focused on collecting all the research being done by the various research cells worldwide and giving it to communities that would form the backbone of the cult's resettlement initiative once they unleashed the global disasters. There were other such settlements scattered around the world, at least one per continent. More specifically, one per suitable geographic region. They hid in quiet corners with good arable land, not so far from population centers that they couldn't get resources. The second branch of the cult was the research teams, of which there were magical and amagical sections. Cora had already known this. She'd been to the Evolved Research offices in Kilmarnock, the hidden magical city in Ontario. While there, she'd heard office chatter about amagical projects alongside magical ones. Charlotte and her colleagues at MI-18 and in the amagical sections of the intelligence service were investigating these areas of the Evolved. She informed Cora that most of the scientists doing the day-to-day work had no idea upper management was using it for nefarious purposes, much less global annihilation. This was also the case for the impressively wide network of corporations and manufacturers owned by, or at least controlled by, the Evolved. There didn't seem to be a pie they didn't have their fingers in.
"They all think they're working on renewable energy, hardier crops, that sort of thing,"
Charlotte told Cora, her voice heavy.
They're unwitting pawns in a game played by shadowy figures in the dark.
Like the necromantic lord?
Cora stared blankly at the cursor flashing at the end of her last line of text. I remember Holly Ashton mentioning that, but I don't think I've heard it since.
Among others?
Yes.
Charlotte's lips drew tight in a flat line.
We seldom catch names and titles in the communiques and memos we intercept. We honestly can't tell if they're legitimate titles or code names. They're paranoid enough to know they're being infiltrated, and we have to take everything with a reasonable amount of skepticism, especially after the attacks at Wild Meadow and in Italy.
We hit them pretty hard, didn't we?
Cora flashed Charlotte a smile, but was surprised when the other woman responded only with a noncommittal, unimpressed hum.
What's that for?
Charlotte grimaced.
It is a huge and truly daunting organization, and that's become clearer than ever. I had expected our attacks to cause a significant dip in the Evolved's business. I thought we'd made quite a dent in their upper echelons.
Cora guessed, not so much, judging by the look on your face.
Not so much,
Charlotte echoed in agreement.
It's been barely a blip. I don't know if that's because they have enough contingencies and backups in place that the network can run without its major players, but my gut says we haven't touched the people in charge of this mess.
Cora sighed and sat back in her armchair, shoving the heels of her hands into her eyes.
Shit.
That, plus the lackeys don't know what's going on.
It makes it difficult to decide who to target and how to bring them down.
Charlotte agreed, finishing Cora's thought.
Exactly. Some of the research is good. Hell, most of it is good, Cora admitted. It's that the higher-ups are using it for the worst ends possible. That's not the scientists' fault.
She groaned and let her hands fall to the arms of the chair, looking at Charlotte.
I have to hand it to them. Not having everyone in on the giant conspiracy helps the truth to stay hidden.
The most successful conspiracies are the ones that know how to hide,
Charlotte dryly agreed.
The Evolved know, 100%.
Cora pursed her lips and nodded.
So, what do we do?
I don't know, Charlotte confessed. To tell you the truth, this has been on my mind since I left you in Italy, and not because it's my job. I want to take these people out as much as you do, Cora, but I don't have the first idea of where to start.
I might.
Cora started so hard at the new voice that she jostled her laptop with her knee, knocking her phone over onto her keyboard. She righted the phone and looked up to see Andrew, the source of the surprise.
Andrew! Jeez, warn me next time you come in!
Sorry.
The 11-year-old didn't look particularly sorry.
I heard you and Charlotte talking and I listened.
She couldn't fault him for that. The Evolved had stolen most of his and his sister's lives. She would have eavesdropped too, in his shoes.
You said you might know where to start? Cora prompted.
Maybe. I was thinking about what Charlotte said about the shadowy figures in the dark. There might be someone. She's about as shadowy as you can get. I don't know if she's still alive. She gets talked about in whispers, and everybody shuts up real fast if you say her name.
Cora's eyebrows rose almost to her hairline.
That sounds like exactly who we need to go after.
Andrew shook his head.
Not to go after. She's not with them anymore. At least, that's how the stories go.
Charlotte huffed, bringing Cora's attention back to her phone briefly.
Send me an address, she directed. Enough of this video call nonsense. I'm coming over there.
Chapter 3 Cora agreed to wait until Charlotte arrived for Andrew to tell the story, although she was dying to know. Andrew's magic was perfect memory. Whatever he remembered would undoubtedly be worth their time. She felt the itch of something actionable under the surface. Luckily, Charlotte was only half an hour from Antonova's terrace house, and it wasn't long before they heard the doorbell ring. Cora answered it, let the intelligence agent in, decided not to remark on the bright pink athletic wear Charlotte had chosen for her jog, and headed with her to the study. At least, that was the plan.
Antonova waylaid her and insisted they all have tea while discussing this new development. Cora acquiesced because you didn't argue with Ivanova Antonova, although she expected you to, and it was her house. Cora had cleared Charlotte's arrival with Ivanova first, but it was still polite. Antonova brought them to a cozy little parlor in the back of the house with more plush armchairs in maroon and silver damask, a very similar paisley pattern to the ones in the library, and matching wallpaper. Do you hire a designer to redo all your houses? Cora idly asked, as she admired the tastefully matched decor. They all look like show homes, but with the feel of being lived in. They're very well done.
Thank you, Antonova said modestly. I decide on all the designs myself, but I mostly have decorators do the work. Occasionally, I will pick up a paint roller, but those days are few and far between now.
The image of Antonova painting a wall stuck in Cora's head while Ivanova poured them all tea. Jack was off doing whatever he was doing, probably working with Ella. When Cora had passed Andrea's room, the little girl had been deep in a book. Since it was a nice change from seeing her buried in research books on increasingly dark and unpleasant subjects, Cora had decided not to interrupt. Andrew's relieved look told her she'd made the right decision, but also made her curious about why Andrew didn't want his little sister along for this particular chat. Once they were finally set up with tea, Cora began. Andrew, you said you thought you knew where we should start? I guess someone we should start with? Andrew held his teacup awkwardly, as he had every time they'd given him tea. Maybe. It might be rumors. When people keep secrets all the time, soon everything feels like a secret. There might be nothing to it. Charlotte shook her head. I don't think so. You have an excellent feel for these things, Andrew. If you feel this is worth our time, I suspect you're probably right. A light smile played across Andrew's face, and Cora hid her smile. Charlotte wasn't wrong, but she also did a fine job playing off Andrew's raging insecurities. The kid still felt like he lived in his little sister's shadow, although he loved Andrea to the moon and back, and wanted to protect her from everything and anyone. In the face of Andrea's prodigious ability with warding spells, Cora couldn't blame Andrew for feeling like he was second best. Appealing to his strengths would boost his confidence. Her name is Jillian. Anytime I heard anyone talk about her, they called her Aunt Jillian. I don't know why. One of Antonova's eyebrows flicked upward, but the matriarch said nothing. Cora and Charlotte stayed silent as well and waited for Andrew to continue. It took a long time, a lot of sneaking around and listening in dark corners to get as much of her story as I have, the young boy added at last. Even so, it's not the whole story. With this disclaimer, he continued. She disappeared years ago, from the sound of it. More than 5, less than 10. I couldn't get a good read on the actual timeline. No one would say any actual dates or years, but they finally made enough references to other things happening that I could at least narrow it down that far. They always talked about her like they were sad. It was so sad how Aunt Jillian came down with that horrible cancer, they said. How sad. How awful. The way he said it made Cora think that he was parroting back the words he'd heard from those dark corners, and the tone struck her. It was insincere, the flattest, thinnest of platitudes. How sad, like you'd say about someone you knew you were supposed to care about but did not. How awful, taken too soon, what a shame. A shiver ran down her spine. What had happened to this woman? Had she been quietly disappeared by the Evolved's highest echelons? It felt like some people were sad she was gone, Andrew continued, bringing Cora out of her reflections. Some people weren't. One person said she was the best of us. Someone else said she was too good, they couldn't let her go on. And someone else said good riddance to bad rubbish. Cora met Charlotte's gaze and knew the agent was thinking the same. A polarizing figure, and a powerful one at that. Someone with morals, perhaps. Someone who didn't entirely agree with the Evolved's means or their chosen ends.
I dared ask about her once. I asked Miss Ashton when it was only the two of us, and she didn't have to pretend.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?